Do you just love this podcast so much and wish you could find a way to monetarily support us? Well, guess what? Much like NPR, we thrive on support from viewers like you. So if you love this podcast and you want to become a contributor, all you have to do is go to anchor.fm. That's ANCHOR.FM. Click the support button and choose the amount that you want to contribute each month to our podcast. This helps keep our podcast going, and it keeps the phenomenal content that you have come to know and love flowing. So yeah, what are you waiting for? Sign up today. As always, thank you so much for being a listener. We appreciate you, we see you, and we hope you enjoy the show. Spoiler alert. If you do not want this film ruined, do not proceed. There's spoilers galore. You have been warned. Welcome to Talk Classic to Me, the classic film podcast and movie club where I, Sarah Greenfield, your host and classic film enthusiast, bring in my entertaining friends to talk about classic movies or any other old-fashioned form of media that strikes my fancy. On today's show, we're talking about the film Halloween from 1978 with my wonderful guest, Nick Lang. Welcome to Talk Classic to Me. I am your host, Sarah Greenfield, and today on the show, I have my wonderful friend, Nick Lang. Hello, Nick. How are you?
I'm great, Sarah. It's great to be back.
It's great to have you back, by the way. So today on the show, we are watching the film Halloween from 1978. Nick, how was this viewing experience for you this time around?
All right. So Halloween, it's a classic. It's one of the enormous staples in not only Halloween cinema, but also the slasher genre. It's so classic. It's been referenced and parodied so many times, and it's very in the zeitgeist. It's a cultural phenomenon. We all know this movie. Even if we haven't seen this movie, we know the movie. It's a very simple movie. You go back, you watch it, and you go, okay, it's clear that they didn't have all the money in the world when they made this, and they work with what they had, and it's inspiring to watch. And it's a movie that, growing up, I had known this movie. I've seen this movie in bits and pieces forever, but it's not a movie that growing up, I like watched incessantly, like some other movies that I've seen more, that I've been more familiar with. Because of the slasher genre, there are the big three, that is Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers, and Jason Voorhees. My favorite was Freddy Krueger. So I'm more familiar with the Nightmare on Elm Street films, but it was great watching this one. This one is the earliest of those three.
I also know that just on this particular viewing, we are recording this in the morning, kind of way before Halloween. Although Nick and I are both wearing special Halloween t-shirts that look fabulous. He's wearing a Beetlejuice shirt and I'm wearing like a really fabulous
skeleton
cinema shirt. It's really, really awesome. I think, awesome. I hope it glows in the dark. I actually didn't check. I think it does. And that's neither here nor there.
It's cool.
But that was all just to say, thank you, Nick. So just to say that I know that you watched this particular viewing like first thing in the morning.
Early morning viewing of Halloween. Yes.
Yes.
My girlfriend Amy and I woke up at 7:30 and said, all right, we have to watch Halloween because I'm doing this podcast. So we woke up at 7:30, made some coffee, and then put on the movie Halloween. And it's the perfect thing to watch early in the morn.
You know, I just love that. So I wanted to shout that out. And thanks for waking up early and doing that, Nick. That's really
sweet. My pleasure.
So the reason I chose this film this time around is that our podcast this year is falling on Halloween. Like the day I would normally release this show just happens to be Halloween. So I thought, what's more perfect than releasing an episode about the film Halloween on Halloween? Our one little kind of like, oh, that's going to get in the way of that is that I don't normally watch horror films. They scare me too much. Mm-hmm. So I knew I could handle this one only because you had mentioned it's so part of the zeitgeist of our culture that I felt like because I have seen films like Scream
and Scream plays a lot on what these films do, I felt a little more prepared to watch it. And also last year I had watched it on Halloween, but I watched like the edited for TV version. So I was curious if I could handle the real not edited for TV version. And guess what, everybody? I can. And that makes me feel very proud of myself. Look how far I've come.
I'm proud of you too. I was surprised when you picked this movie. But I was like, you know what? Good job. Good job,
Thank
Sarah.
you. Thanks. I really appreciate it. And then I picked you to watch it with me, obviously, because you are like our resident
Of
horror film
course.
expert, of course.
Love them. Love them. Love them.
I was going to say they're the best. They're not the best. I don't
They're
know why
not the
that was going to come out of
best.
my mouth.
They're not the best. And this movie has its problems that we'll talk about later in the modern lens section of the episode. We will
Yes.
talk about it.
All right. So, listeners, I will give you a plot synopsis of what this movie is about. There will be spoilers. So, if you don't want to hear the spoilers, go watch the movie and come back. Guess what? It's really short. So, you can watch the movie very
Yes,
quickly.
it's only an hour and a half. Practically nothing happens in this movie. And my guess is that even if you haven't seen this movie, you already know what happens in it.
And you've already probably seen the scariest thing in it. I think that's also what helped me to be able to watch it as a not horror person. I feel like the scariest moment is when it's when he rises again. That's the scariest moment when he's behind Jamie Lee Curtis and he
Yes.
comes back from the dead and you're like, oh my God. But because I already knew that happened and that's already been in the conversation, I wasn't as scared. It was really
Yes.
helpful.
And you saw Scream before you saw this movie?
I did. I had to watch Scream because I was in a reading of Scream.
Gotcha.
So,
Gotcha.
because I did like this live reading of that movie, that was kind of what made me think I could handle this. And also, I think being in something makes you less afraid of it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And they, because we also, Amy and I just recently watched all the Scream movies. So then in watching this one, it's really fun going back and watching this one after watching Scream because they talk about this movie in particular so much in Scream.
Yes, that was another reason I felt prepared to watch it because they talk about it so much in Scream. So yeah, I don't know how I would handle Freddy Krueger. I don't know how I'd handle Jason Voorhees, but this I was prepared enough for that it felt okay. All right, so everyone at home, I'm going to get into the plot synopsis of this film. What I think is really cool about this film is the way it opens. I don't know that a film had been done this way before, with the point of view of the killer. It had. Nick is, yeah.
We're gonna talk about that a little bit.
Okay, so the film opens with a point of view shot, basically. I mean, we get our opening credits with like our jack-o'-lantern and our really, really iconic score, as written by John Carpenter. That kind of mixes like this is childlike, but ooh, listen to this modern synth score, like blending the two. Ooh, okay, so we've got that, and then the candles burn out of the eyeballs of the jack-o'-lantern, and we're in it. Okay. So here we are. We're in the film. We're POV of someone. We don't know whose eyes we're in yet. We enter a home. There's a jack-o'-lantern on the door. We're wearing what appears to be a clown costume. We like look down as we pick up a knife and we're walking through the house. We see two teenagers making out and then they go upstairs to presumably have sex. They have maybe the shortest sex ever because the guy is back downstairs 90 seconds
Yeah, the
later.
second shortest sex ever, the shortest sex ever is later in the same film.
Yes. Or also maybe in the film 8 Mile as well. But so the one male teenager leaves, the female teenager is upstairs, the person enters the room, the killer enters the room, sees the naked teenager, and the lady goes like, Michael, and she tries to cover up, and then the killer starts stabbing her. And we're like, oh man, this girl's getting stabbed. Ah. And then it is revealed after the person exits the house, we kind of leave POV shot and we see that it's a little boy, that like a small child has just committed this crime. Potentially because that older boy stole his mask, which is a pretty either he doesn't like seeing people have sex or he's like judging women for having sex, or he just really hates that that guy took his clown mask.
Michael Myers, why does
What
he
a
do it?
guy. Why does he do it? So that's just the establishing, like, oh my gosh, it's a child that committed this murder. Whoa. So it's 15 years later. It's 1978. Jamie Lee Curtis is on her way to school, doing an errand for her dad, dropping off keys at the Myers house. Wait, does that come before the Mr. Loomis stuff, or does it?
I think Dr. Loomis is before that, where Dr. Loomis and the nurse are going to the hospital to to go and see Michael Myers, because Dr. Loomis is like, I got to make sure this guy stays locked up forever. He's pure evil.
He's pure evil. And it sounds like Michael might be up, because Michael's 21 now. So it sounds like, oh, maybe he's up for like a reevaluation. Should this person still be institutionalized? So it sounds like he might be up for a reevaluation. And Loomis is like, no, he shouldn't. He is pure evil. So they're going to the mental institution.
Some sort of hospital where Michael has been institutionalized for 15 years.
And we learn that he has like never spoken since. Yeah. And, you know. And the reason the doctor knows he's pure evil is because of his eyes.
The devil's eyes.
You know, that sounds a little prejudiced. Oh, and we know that Michael has escaped. We know that Michael has escaped. Yeah. He steals the car that the nurse and the doctor are in. And they're like, oh my gosh, I think he's going back to his hometown. Whoa.
Yes. And his superpowers are revealed. Like, he's so strong. He can break the window with his bare hands. He's been institutionalized for 15 years since he was 6 years old. But for some reason, he knows how to drive the car.
Yeah.
There he goes. He's off into the night.
And he's so stealthy. Like, no one hears him climb on top of the car. You know, that's a feat. I could not climb on top of a car without making noise. Yeah. Things like that. So he's stealthy. He's strong. He just kind of knows how to do things. And he's smart. Is that kind of like his superpowers?
I wouldn't say he's smart, but he definitely has magic ability to know certain things that he couldn't possibly know.
He's got street smarts.
He's street smart. Michael, he's street smart.
Okay, so that's Michael. So fast forward, it's Lori. She's a teenager. She's going to high school. She's got to drop off some keys, at the Myers house, cause that house might sell. Who knows? We find out she's babysitting later that night. We meet her and her cool friends. They're all really fun. She's kind of the more bookish smart one. They have dates. She doesn't, she's a little sad about it, but I'm like, girl, wait till after high school. You're a catch. Don't worry about it. But anyway, Michael sees her as she drops off the keys at the Myers house, and he becomes obsessed with her and follows her around for the rest of the day. And we're like, oh God, this isn't going to turn out very well. So eventually she goes to babysit that night. Her and her friends do. Her friends also have like plans to, what you used to do when you babysat in the 70s was like not actually watch the kid. And you'd like talk to your friends on the phone and have your boyfriend come over. And so Lori's like actually doing her job and babysitting, but her two friends are like planning to like hook up with dudes and, you know, have a whole night of it.
And it's Halloween.
Thank you. Of course. How could I forget that little fact? It's Halloween. And these kids have seemingly not trick-or-treated, which is kind of messed up.
Yeah.
You know, we can get into it later. I'm like, where is Lindsay's costume? Does this little girl get to do nothing? Not fair.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. So her friends one by one get murdered by Michael. Lori is targeted as being next. She is very smart and figures out how to beat Michael. But even then, Michael still keeps coming back. Like, she'll stab him and stupidly put the knife back down and he'll like come back. And then she'll stab him again and he'll come back again. I'm like, girl, at this point, you just need to carry that knife. Like, I don't know why you keep putting it down. But then eventually Loomis catches up with them and he shoots Michael like 5 or 6 times. Michael falls off a second story balcony and we're like, oh, he's finally dead. But when they go to, or the, I don't even know if they go to sleep, but when we, the viewers see at the end of the film that he's not there, that he has left. And then the very end of the film is just shots of all the empty rooms that we've been seeing all night and the breathing of Michael behind his mask. So evil still lives.
Yeah. You know, he's still out there.
Because I think it's like kind of the conceit of like this movie to me feels like a campsite scary story of like, ooh, what's the scariest thing? The boogeyman, you can't kill evil. Like once upon a time on a normal street, there was an evil boy in an evil house. Like it's like that kind of vibe to it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I also think another theme of this film is adults being bad at their jobs. That was something I want to say to people at home. We've said this. I'm not a horror expert. Nick is. So this is an outsider perspective. But what it looked like to me was a lot of adults being really bad at their jobs and teens picking up the slack. Like it can all be led back to adults. If Lori's dad did his job, she wouldn't have been there to put that key in. Like, he could have driven the one block and put the key in, but no, he had to send his daughter to do it. So, like, if he had done his job, if Dr. Loomis was better at his job, none of this would have happened.
Dr. Loomis is a funny character because he does almost nothing through the entire film. He's two blocks away from where all the murders are happening all night. He's waiting by an empty house all night, going like, "I know Michael will be here later tonight." And then Michael never goes there. And
No.
then later, at the very end of the movie, Dr. Loomis shows up to quote unquote save the day, but he doesn't really do anything.
He shoots him, but like Lori probably would have gotten out of it.
Shoots him, but Michael's fine.
Michael's fine. And also, that car was on that block for hours. So
He,
he's
yes,
standing
he's
there and
standing there
not
looking
noticing
in
the
the
car.
wrong direction for about 6 hours. And then he goes, "Oh, that's the car that was stolen earlier in the film."
Also, how do they not call that car in? How do people not know the license plates? There's like so many people being so bad at their jobs. And even the adults that don't let Lori in the house, I was like, you're not even good at being adults. This person is clearly in distress. You see she's in distress and you turn the lights off on her? That is ice cold.
Yes, it is ice cold, but it's explained because you go, okay, it's Halloween. They think it's a Halloween prank.
But it's Lori.
I
Don't they know
know.
their neighbors? She would never pull that shit.
Well, she kind of lives a little bit of ways from this
Okay.
area. She
Okay.
because she's the babysitter coming in to like
That's true.
be there for the evening. And they go, "These crazy kids." And there is that whole thing of the adults do not trust the kids through the entire movie.
Yeah.
They're going like, "These crazy kids, they're doing this, they're doing that." Like at one point in the movie, Dr. Loomis goes to see the grave of Michael's sister. Isn't her name Judith Myers? And
Yeah.
Judith Myers, who is the woman who is, well, the girl who got killed in the beginning of the movie, Michael killed her, and then they go to see her grave, and her tombstone has been taken. Michael took her tombstone, and they assume it is teenagers playing a prank.
Yes.
And I would say that Lori is an incredibly capable teenager who picks up all the slack. But the other teenagers in the movie are also not trustworthy. They're like supposed to be babysitting. They don't babysit. They go into random people's houses and start having sex in their beds.
Yeah.
Like,
With beer cans littered across the floor. And I was like, one, how did you drink those that fast?
yeah.
Two, this isn't even your house. Aren't you worried that anyone will notice you're there? They don't care.
They don't care. The another thing that as we were watching the movie, Amy was watching it with me, and Amy said, "Where are these kids' parents? Like, don't they want to be with their kids on
On Halloween.
Halloween? Isn't that like one of the things when your kids are little, you want to see them dress up in costumes and like trick or treat with them? Isn't that one of the joys of being a parent?"
To me, it was Hocus Pocus adjacent because it's like, remember in Hocus Pocus how all the parents are at that really crazy party? And so that's why all the teenage bullies are out in the street and no one is stopping them. I was like, is this must be a Hocus Pocus situation.
Where all the parents are at a party, also being killed.
But also being killed, but also justice for Lindsay, because we had said this a little bit earlier, before the call, Nick and I were talking about how charming it is, like kids trick-or-treating, and especially when you live in a city, you don't really get to see that a lot. So it's like really charming when you see it. But like it appears that these children have maybe not trick-or-treated, and Lindsay is definitely not in a costume, and no, none of them have candy.
Yes, it is sort of depressing that the two kids in the movie did not really get to trick or treat, it appears. And there are other kids trick or treating throughout the
There
movie.
are. And it seems like a long trick-or-treating period. It feels like they start trick-or-treating at like 4. Well, I guess that's how it always is.
I think it depends on the age of the kids. Or younger kids trick or treat earlier, and then there are parts where in this movie, once all the killings have started, and you see Michael Myers like walking around across the street and everything, there will be shots where just random kids run across in the foreground, like they're still trick or treating and they don't know it, but Michael Myers is right there killing people.
That's kind of part of the joy of this film too, though, of like you had mentioned this earlier, Jamie Lee Curtis isn't helped because people are assuming it's a Halloween prank, and Michael Myers isn't observed because he's wearing a mask and that fits in perfectly on Halloween. It's like the one day that that's allowed and people won't think that's weird. So he's kind of getting away with a lot of this because it's Halloween. But also you had mentioned there's like this juxtaposition of like people don't know what to be afraid of necessarily. So one of the killings, specifically the killing of Linda, she thinks her boyfriend is coming into the room in like a ghost costume with his glasses on because he's wearing like his own glasses. And she doesn't know that she's supposed to be afraid. It's like a lot of the, we think it's one thing, but it's actually another. Same with Michael being a child in the beginning. Like we wouldn't be afraid of a child, but this is a different kind of child.
Even when he shows up in the beginning to kill his sister, she turns around and she goes, Michael.
Yeah.
And then he stabs her to death. This is a movie where, unlike Scream or movies that came after this movie, through the entire film, none of the kids know that anything is wrong. They all just think that it's a regular night until they get killed. The only one who starts to suspect anything weird is Lori, because she hears her friend dying on the phone, and she doesn't think that her friend is dying, really. Why would you ever think that? But she is the one who then starts to investigate, and a guy randomly starts trying to kill her, and she, like a pro, just reacts really well, saves the kids, puts the kids to safety, then fights the guy multiple times.
Yes.
But we were, you know, we were watching the movie going like, Lori has had a terrible day because she had to go to school earlier in the day. You saw her like have a full day at school. Then she's working all night making food for these kids.
Yeah.
I'm assuming cleaning their house, all this stuff. Taking care of these kids, and then she fights a serial killer.
But even before then, her friends have a little bit humiliated her because she tells a friend of hers, they've kind of been ragging on her for not having a date for the dance the next night, and or two, whenever the dance is, I don't know.
Yeah, it's the next night.
It's the next night. And she tells her friend that she has a crush on a boy, and the friend spills the beans to the boy. So she's got this whole like, oh my gosh, and my friend told my crush that I have a crush on them. On top, I know that's really minor comparatively. And then she fights a serial killer. So yes, I hadn't thought about all of that, Nick, but you are correct. A full day for Lori.
Lori's had a rough day. And then have you seen the sequels
at all? I have not seen any of that. This is the only one
I've seen. So here's a spoiler alert. Halloween 2 takes place on the same night.
No.
The night continues after that.
Poor Lori.
Where Lori continues to fight Michael Myers on the same night, and more people die, a whole other movie's worth of people die. She has this whole thing, she fights Michael. It's just the worst night ever.
Poor Lori. And I bet she handles it like a pro continually.
She sure does. Yeah, she sure
and I
does.
Really like her. So actually this leads me to two things. One, I want to go over like the tropes of this film and like what this film brought to the genre. But before we do that, I wanted to tell you my theory that I had about this film.
Yeah.
So as I'm watching it, something that strikes me is Michael might be stuck in time in this brain that he had when he was six. So he commits this first kill at six. He kills his sister, presumably because he's judging her for having sex with somebody, right? So he kills her. And to me, I think he's stuck kind of in that time frame, like stuck in that moment forever and ever. Because what I see when he sees Lori for the first time, Lori is talking to the boy she's going to babysit later, Tommy. So it's Lori and Tommy talking to each other. And that's what Michael sees from the house when he decides he's going to be obsessed with Lori. And he's not just obsessed with Lori. He follows Tommy to school, too. Yeah. So I think in Tommy and Lori, he sees himself and his sister, and he's going to like relive kind of in the name of Tommy, he's going to relive that moment tonight. And so all of the people that he kills are teenagers having sex, except for that extra like truck driver or person that he stole the uniform from. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, in my brain, just this movie, I know that there is like other lore outside of this movie, but to me, just in this movie, that's like why he would, because I was like, why would he be so obsessed with her? And to me, that's the reason why, of like, he sees her with the little boy, that is his sister. He's going to kill his sister over and over.
Yes, he's clearly obsessed with that moment, because he does kill Annie, the girl in the car, that he kills in the car. And then the tombstone comes back because Lori finds all of her dead friends in the bedroom, and there's the girl lying on the bed with the tombstone above her, the Judith Myers tombstone. So clearly, Michael is trying to recreate that night.
So my theory is correct. So for being a not horror person, just by liking movies, I was like, yeah, I got that relationship. I see what's happening here.
Yep, there you
Hey,
go.
I do want to say there are a lot of jack-o'-lanterns, and I don't buy that shit. There was a jack-o'-lantern in every bedroom, and I was like, no.
Yes,
Fools.
there were jack-o'-lanterns in bedrooms. I think that the teenagers took them there.
Okay. So I was like, that's a lot.
'Cause I don't think any adult would put a jack-o'-lantern
No.
in their bedroom. This is something that one thing, because obviously, again, this movie did not have the biggest budget in the world. There have since been many movies set on Halloween. And, earlier we were talking about Hocus Pocus, which I think is the greatest Halloween movie ever.
Thank you for saying that. I so appreciate that. It's my favorite Halloween
It's
movie.
great. It's also the most Halloweeny of the movies. I think that one of the things that I wish this movie had done, but I think that it was just not as common of a practice in the 70s, because the celebration of Halloween has been popularized and has gotten way bigger over the past 50, 60 years. But I wish that they would have decorated more for Halloween. Because the only Halloween decorations that exist are a few jack-o'-lanterns here and there. But again, you're going like they didn't have the budget to like put a million jack-o'-lanterns everywhere.
And they shot it in spring. So they were saying the production designers were having a hard time getting their hands on autumnal items. So,
Wow.
like, they found some fake fall foliage that they could put up, but they like
Yeah.
could not get their hands on a lot of Halloween stuff,
Wow.
because it was
There you go.
May. So there you go.
There you go. That's why.
Yeah. But so, resident horror expert, would you please guide us through some of the tropes that this film kind of established in the horror genre? Like, what did this movie bring to the genre? What did it do first? What was its impact?
Okay, so this movie put a lot of elements together first. This was really the first insanely popular slasher movie. But this movie has direct influences that came before this movie, which brings me to talking about one movie in particular, which is a movie called Black Christmas, which was made in 1974. So Black Christmas is a movie that was directed by Bob Clark, who also directed the movie A Christmas Story. So this guy does all kinds of manner of Christmas. He does Happy Christmas, he does Scary Christmas, all of that. So Black Christmas is a movie where I don't even think it was the first movie that did it, but Black Christmas also starts with a point of view shot from the killer. And so Black Christmas is about a killer that sneaks into a sorority house around Christmas and starts killing the girls in the sorority house as everyone is trying to find the killer. And the beginning of the movie is literally you're looking from the killer's point of view as he walks to the sorority house, climbs up the side of the house, sneaks into the attic where he is then hiding through the rest of the film. And you hear his breathing, you do that whole thing. And he then proceeds to, murder the different girls throughout the course of the film. And you never see him. And so the difference, spoiler alert for anyone who has not seen that movie, there's an enormous difference in that in Halloween, you know the entire time who the killer is. You know that it's Michael Myers. You've seen from the beginning that it's Michael Myers. You know that he's out there, he's doing all of this. In Black Christmas, they do not reveal really who the killer is. You go through the whole film kind of wondering, there are different suspects and things like that. And there are some scenes that are lifted almost directly from Black Christmas in Halloween, Like even the scene where the main girl goes into the bedroom to find her friend dead on the bed and then kind of backs away and the killer attacks her. That is right from Black Christmas. Black Christmas has way more of, it's way more vulgar of a movie that they have this trope that is, I don't even think this was the first movie to do it, but the call is coming from inside the house sort of thing of you get the phone call and there's this whole element of Black Christmas where the killer keeps calling the sorority house and just saying awful, vulgar things to them over the phone.
Like Scream.
Like Scream, very
Yeah.
much like Scream. And throughout the whole movie, they're going like, who are you? Who is this? And they even do that in Halloween, where Lori picks up the phone and hears like a breathing on the phone and she goes, who is this? Who is this? And so that's kind of from Black Christmas. I'm pretty sure that John Carpenter was in some way influenced by Bob Clark or some sort of thing like that. But Bob Clark had a quote that he did after he did the movie Black Christmas, where people asked him if he had an idea for the sequel to Black Christmas. And he said that his original idea for the sequel to Black Christmas was that the killer would return on Halloween
Whoa.
and start the murder spree again on Halloween. They never made that movie. And then, John Carpenter, I think, maybe was influenced by that whole idea and said, okay, it's going to be like Black Christmas, only it's going to be on Halloween. And so it's another holiday slasher killer sort of thing. But in the movie Black Christmas, he never kills anybody with a knife.
Oh.
So he kills people with various different things, never a knife. So in Halloween, it's the first time where there is a, I'm pretty sure, where there is a silent masked killer who is going around slashing teens specifically with a knife.
So this is literally the first slasher film in that aspect.
Slasher, yes, in that
Cool.
aspect, yes. Which then was gone on to be replicated again and again. Like, Friday the 13th, also another silent killer going around in a mask, killing people with not a knife, but I think he uses many different things. He uses a machete mainly. That's Jason Voorhees and all of that. So, Halloween was a big, very influential film. It popularized a bunch of things, even I think going so far as to popularizing the idea of Halloween in general. So,
Whoa. Really?
it's like Halloween has been an idea that has been growing in popularity. I think they really started celebrating it in the United States in like the 50s. And then it's just been growing in popularity since then. It wasn't always the most popular holiday.
Was this kind of maybe the first? I know that horror films had been successful before, but was this kind of the first movie in a long time that showed how financially successful horror films could be? Is that why it set off that whole chain? Because you've mentioned this on the show before, and a lot, actually, someone mentioned it last week when we were watching Serial Mom about how like horror films are so cheap to make. But I
Yes.
wonder how financially successful had they been, and was this film that kind of set it off because it was so financially successful?
I'm not 100% certain, but it was obviously very successful. They made sequels to it, and then it started the whole slasher craze that then took
Yeah.
off in the 80s, which led to the, creation of Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, all of these slasher movies that were popularized.
Can I tell you some fun hidden gem facts that I learned about this movie this morning?
Yes.
Okay, so apparently John Carpenter also didn't just base this on Black Christmas, but also Psycho apparently had some elements threaded through.
Psycho is obviously a movie that has a killer with a knife,
Yes.
slashing people.
But I don't know if I'd call that the first slasher film. I don't know, because it doesn't follow those tropes. It's more of like a suspense thriller as opposed to a slasher film.
It is not the kind of movie where it's a lot of people walking through hallways saying, hello, who's there? And
Yeah.
then a killer coming out and killing you. Also, like specifically the masked killer.
Yeah.
because Norman Bates does wears a certainly a costume.
Spoiler alert, Norman Bates.
Spoiler alert, Norman Bates is the killer in Psycho, but yeah, he doesn't wear
Yeah.
specifically a mask.
A mask. But I did read, and I didn't catch this, that so Sam Loomis, that character is that his name here? Dr. Loomis, and this was named for a character in Psycho whose last name is Loomis. That's like an homage paid. And obviously Jamie Lee Curtis is the daughter of Janet Lee, who was in Psycho and who was Slash, so that's very cool. But then Tommy Doyle is a character in Rear Window. That's the character, that's the name of the little boy. And I didn't catch it because I fucking hate that character in Rear Window. That's like the asshole detective. Didn't catch it.
And he's the kid who sees the killer through the window that no one believes him.
But that's not who Tommy Doyle is in Rear Window. It would have made more sense for them to name it after Jimmy Stewart's character, because Tommy Doyle's the one in Rear Window that doesn't believe Jimmy Stewart. He's like, "You're making it up. I don't believe you." And you're like, "Ugh, I don't like you, Wendell Corey, in this role."
So Loomis in Psycho, then in Halloween, then obviously again in Scream, Billy Loomis.
Whoa, Mike, I forgot that was
Yeah,
his name.
Billy
You're right.
Loomis
Whoa.
is there is a character also named Loomis in the Scream movie, which draws direct inspiration from Halloween to the point to where they are watching Halloween in the movie.
Which is again how I knew I could handle it because of that film. All right, so there's that. That's fun. Also, PJ Souls is the actress who plays Linda, and her character is like having sex with her boyfriend Bob in the bed upstairs. And she was dating Dennis Quaid at the time, and it turns out he was almost in that movie with it. Like, he was almost in this movie playing Bob, but he had like a scheduling conflict and couldn't do it. And I kind of love that Dennis Quaid could have been in this. There are two actors that play Michael. Tony Moran is the face version of Michael. So there's one point when his mask is ripped off. And that's a great moment because it shows he's just like a normal dude. Like, in your brain, you're kind of thinking Phantom of the Opera, I think, that he's going to be like a monster and disfigured when his mask is removed. And he's just like a normal 21-year-old guy. And you're like, whoa. So that's cool. But then there's also someone that plays, they call it the shape of Michael, and that's Nick Castle. So there's all that stuff. I'm sure you knew that one. I found out tonight that John Carpenter voiced Paul, who's the boyfriend that Annie's talking to on the phone. I didn't
That's
know
great.
that. Some more fun facts. Michael's mask comes from a Captain Kirk mask the production designer found in a store. I think he melted it a little, painted it white. And the whole goal of that was that they wanted, Deborah Hill is one of the writers, and she said, "We wanted something that looked humorless and that was like sort of a pale visage that could resemble a human or not." And she also said she didn't want kids scared of William Shatner, so they didn't want it to look like William Shatner.
But yeah, it's a Captain Kirk mask, which is always a fun thing to think about. But yeah, even earlier in the movie, Dr. Loomis describes Michael and describes his face as being pale and emotionless and all of that. And so it's he's describing the actual guy, but it ends up being a really good description of what the mask looks like. So
And there's parts where he's like, I feel like they're trying to show us how humans would react. Like, originally people want to have compassion for Michael. The nurse is like, "Don't you have compassion?" You know, she's people want to put humanness on Michael, and the doctor keeps saying he is not human. He is not a man. He is something else. He's pure, simply pure
he's
evil.
a beast. He's the devil. He's pure
And
evil.
then I think him eating a dog and killing a dog also helps with that.
Yeah, he kills several dogs in the course of the film. And there's the part where they go into the old Myers house and they say, "What is that? I think it's a dog." And Dr. Loomis says, "He got hungry." So Michael killed and ate a dog.
Yeah, raw too, it
Raw.
sounds like. Ew. Would a human do that? It's kind of like
No.
the
That's how you know someone's pure evil. It's if they hurt a dog.
and then eat it raw. Ew.
And then Michael does kill it. Again, trigger warning. If you don't like seeing animals get hurt, Michael does kill a dog on screen.
On screen. Because the dog is barking and it's going to give up his position.
This is also another thing where in horror movies, always listen to the dog. If the dog says something's wrong, you know something's wrong.
With one exception that I can think of, which is body double. In that case,
Body
the
double.
dog was
Yeah.
wrong.
Also in the movie The Thing, which again, this is another thing that is interesting, is that in Halloween, they watch two horror movies, but they watch the first one they're watching is The Thing from Another World. And then John Carpenter, who obviously loved that movie, then went on to remake it as The Thing, with Kurt Russell and Keith David and several other people. And that movie is a great, it's one of the best remakes you'll ever see, is The Thing. And that movie starts with a dog that you should not trust.
I had one more hidden gem. That's not that big. It's just like during the making of, because they shot this out of sequence, John Carpenter and Jamie Lee Curtis came up with something called the fearometer.
Yeah.
So they could test, like he would tell her, okay, at this point you're a six. At this point you're a 9.5. So she could gauge how scared to appear in that moment. Because you don't know when you're shooting out of sequence.
Yeah.
So that's like the only other little fun, like behind the scenes fact.
Did John Carpenter also write the song?
He did. He wrote the score. And
Wow.
it's, I read this morning that it was because they had screened it somewhere and it wasn't getting the reactions they wanted. They were going to use like a more traditional score. And so he was like, you know what? I've got an idea for this. Let me just go on my synthesizer and write it
Yeah.
myself. And he did. He didn't know how to read music. He did have help from someone, though. It says like composed by John Carpenter, but I read that I can't remember the person's name. He did receive help from like a professor that was also a composer, I think, in the score, like in the physically writing out of the score. The transposing the comp, I forget how you would say that, whatever it is,
Yeah.
he did receive a little bit of help, but it's very simple. It's just a couple notes over and over repeated.
It's fantastic. There are a few great like horror movie scores, and this is
This is
maybe
one of them.
one of the most iconic ones ever.
And it's really effective. It does get your heart rate going. I think what's interesting about it to me too is it's an electronic score. And I feel like that would have been a newer thing in 78. Like
Yeah.
we would have always had strings beforehand. And so it's interesting that it's electronic.
Yeah.
I do want to shout out that this film was co-written by a woman. So this film was written, directed, and scored by John Carpenter, but it was also produced and co-written by Deborah Hill. So I think the women in this film seem to have a lot of agency. They're very cool and
Yeah.
they're very capable. And so while there are obviously things that are not great that I don't love about what they've
Yeah.
done with the women in this film, I do think it's really cool that the bold people in the film are the women. And I know
Yeah.
that Deborah Hill specifically wrote all of the female dialogue on the screen.
Yeah, that's great.
So I did want to shout that out because I think that's cool. Totally. She wrote the totally stuff.
It's important. Yeah, and Jamie Lee Curtis, this was the movie that made her the original Scream Queen, you know?
And she's also, I was reading like there's this trope called the last girl in
Yeah.
horror, and she's like the original the last girl,
Yeah, the final girl.
the final girl. And then there's like the whole trope of like the virgin being the one to live that I learned about from the film Scream. And so Jamie, because she's the only character that's like not having sex with people, she's the one that gets to live.
Yes, there are many horror movies that will kind of do that sort of thing where they're kind of like weird morality tales where you go like, okay, the teens that are behaving quote unquote badly are the ones that are punished. That goes big time for Friday the 13th, which is specifically why the killer is, because again, spoiler alert, but if you've seen the movie Scream, you know that there are several killers in the Friday the 13th movies. In the first one, it is not Jason Voorhees, it is somebody else, but still killing because of what happened to Jason Voorhees in the world, which is it was at a camp, and Jason was a boy who was swimming who drowned because the counselors weren't paying attention and were having sex. So, specifically in Friday the 13th, there is this whole thing of the killer is punishing fornicating teens in at this camp in revenge for what happened to Jason Voorhees.
Whereas in this, there's not really like the tie of that in terms of like Michael wasn't harmed in any way because his sister was having sex. He was just judging it. So like, it's interesting. Yeah, that Jason's like, this is my reason. And in this, it's like, I'm just evil. I just want to do this.
Michael Myers is, you know, they say it constantly throughout the film. He's just pure evil. There, it's like, yeah. Why did he do it? Because he's pure evil. He gets some kind of sick pleasure from murdering people that remind him of his sister. And, you know, this is a huge spoiler, huge spoiler. Okay. And Sarah, I don't know if you know this. Are you going to watch the sequels?
Well, I might watch the second one maybe, but I think for the most part, no. Okay. And I actually think I know what you're going to say because I think it came up when I was looking up notes. Yeah. But yes, please.
So
share.
Laurie Strode is revealed to be Michael's sister.
I think they just needed something to add to it. And they're like, oh, what if we did this twist? Do you think it was from the beginning? Do you think John Carpenter was like, I've got it? I think they added it. I don't think it was original.
No, I don't think it was original either. But I think that it's a cool thing to say, all right, here's the two adversaries, to say this is why he's so obsessed with her specifically. Because, you know, if you're turning it from a one movie, an isolated incident into a series, you go, there has to be a reason why he's specifically targeting her, beyond the idea that, okay, he just wants to get her because she got away. I think it was a kind of a cool idea to say that Michael is obsessed with killing his sister. And then he finds out, oh, I have another sister out there. I'll go kill her. So I think that, and it just kind of, you know, it adds something special to Laurie, makes her like the chosen one. You know, it's like the Star Wars thing where you go, she's the Luke Skywalker of this world, where she's related to the bad guy in a way. And that's why she's the only one who can beat him, you know?
Spoiler alert for Star Wars, by the way.
Yeah, sorry, everybody.
I know, we're just ruining all of these like really hidden gem classics that people have never seen.
Old movies.
I see what you're saying. For like a wider, if you're going to continue a franchise, it makes sense to have that. But I do just love the idea that like it's Halloween and he's the boogeyman. You can't kill the boogeyman. Like, and I kind of just like that.
There's something classic about the first one of why does he pick them? Just because they were there. They were the unfortunate people that were there, and he's just a maniac who kills anyone that he comes across.
They would not have been there if her dad had been doing her job once again, just saying.
Not at his house specifically, but they still would have been babysitting around his house.
Yeah, I guess that's true. They still had, there was a threat to them still.
Yes, he was killing before they went to the house. He started his rampage. He was going to kill somebody.
Yeah.
Would it have been specifically these people? I don't know. If they weren't walking by at that particular moment.
But like I said, it also, that's, you know, the young boy and the girl that's like the sister. I don't know. I think that might have extra set him off. Because he doesn't kill that nurse when he has the chance to. And he only kills the guy with the car to get his uniform. So the slashery, like killing for no purpose, starts to happen with teenage girls. And because he sees them with Laurie, and because he sees Laurie and that kid first. So I'm like, if he had seen the dad first, I don't know if he would have been set off in the same way.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not.
I'll never have to answer that question because it doesn't exist.
That movie doesn't exist.
Michael being like, all right, I'll go on my way.
But I will say Halloween is a strange franchise. It's one of these franchises that has had so many different, it's had sequels, it's had reboots, it's had sequels that ignore certain sequels and all that. It's one of those franchises because there was Halloween, there's Halloween 2, there's Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, that has nothing to do with Michael Myers. Have you heard of that one?
No. Well, I mean, I've heard of it in my life, but I don't even know what, I couldn't tell you what it's about.
All right. So the Halloween franchise is very unique and specific and interesting because they made Halloween, right? And then they were like, okay, what are we going to do for Halloween 2? Let's just pick right up where the first one left off. So it literally starts on the same night. Michael Myers has disappeared from the lawn. and the murder spree continues. And it's Lori is now the same night going, God, this night could this get any worse? And then, you know, she's got to do this whole thing. But then it appears as though at the end of the second one, spoiler alert, it appears as though they finally lay Michael to rest. They finally say the end. And so then when they went into making Halloween 3, they said, all right, we don't want to do the same thing again. So they had this idea of saying, what if Halloween, the series, is not just about Michael Myers? What if Halloween is an anthology series that can be about anything so long as it takes place on Halloween?
And in Haddonfield, in the same place?
No.
No.
It's just the idea that it's just a story about Halloween. So Halloween 3 is a movie called Halloween Season of the Witch. And what that movie is about is that there's a company called Silver Shamrock that has made these new Halloween masks. And there are three masks. There's a jack-o'-lantern, a skeleton, and a witch. And it's marketing to these kids. And there's this commercial that plays through the entire movie called Two More Days to Halloween, 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 Two More Days to Halloween, Silver Shamrock. And then it's everyone is buying these Halloween masks, but there is some kind of nefarious plot going on. And you follow this investigator who's trying to figure out what's going on with these things. And it turns out that these masks are being created by this company that is a cult. And these masks, when you wear them, they kill you. The masks will melt your face, and not just melt your face, but magically melt your face to where like snakes and bugs come out of it. And it's disgusting. And they actually melt a kid's face in the movie on screen. And the whole idea is that on Halloween, this ancient coven of witches that now has this like witches and warlocks and all this stuff, they are now going to perform this giant ritual where they are going to do a massive sacrifice on Halloween, kill every kid that has one of these masks on across the entire country, and then they're going to do it and have ultimate power or something like that. You know, the investigators have to fight this evil force and all that. And that is what Halloween 3 is about, and people hated it. People hated it so much. They were like, where is Michael Myers? We wanted to see Michael Myers. And it just, their idea completely backfired on them. And then when they made Halloween 4.
Is that H2O?
It's called The Return of Michael Myers. Michael Myers is back. And they go, forget it. Forget Halloween 3. We're sorry. And so then they continue the franchise with Michael Myers. Eventually, they do make Halloween H2O, which came out around the time when we were teenagers.
That's why I've heard of it. And I remember being like, that's a dumb name. Halloween water. Because H2O, it was the 20-year anniversary or whatever.
Yes, it was the 20th anniversary of the first Halloween film. And again, you know, Lori's back. She's going to fight Michael Myers. It's another one of those things. And then eventually they rebooted the series where Rob Zombie made the rebooted Halloween movie. I've actually never seen it, but I know that he like delves really deeper into Michael Myers. Like Michael Myers has a lot more screen time in that film. And then eventually they were like, forget that. Let's go back to Laurie and the original Halloween stuff. And this is what they call a requel, where they go like, okay, it's a reboot and a sequel at the same time. And they bring back Jamie Lee Curtis. And this is the current franchise of things where they actually ignore everything but I think the first two Halloween movies, or even maybe just the first Halloween movie. I don't remember. But it's again, Laurie is now an older woman who is like, Michael Myers is... he's out there and I've been preparing for 50 years to kill him when he comes back.
Very Terminator 2.
And so it's like, how many times is Laurie gonna have one last stand against Michael Myers to
yeah.
last for as long as you can imagine.
And I hear the new one deals with her trauma too. It's like she's so traumatized from what happens in the past.
Yeah.
I thought all the reboot requel sounded like a really, really smart idea. Like, I don't know if I'm gonna watch them. This is a good concept.
Yeah, I think it's a good concept. I love the idea that Laurie is out there, but again, it's weird because they're kind of ignoring the lore that Laurie is his sister, but they kind of don't ignore it because he specifically is after Laurie. But it's kind of like, is it just because she was the survivor in the first time or what, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the thing. But you go like, whatever the case, Laurie Strode versus Michael Myers is one of the classic horror rivalries. It's great.
Oh, that reminds me of something we didn't totally talk about, which is another trope, which is like the loudmouth. So it's like, if you're sexually active, you're probably going to get killed in these movies. But also if you're like loudmouth and funny, you're also probably going to get killed.
Yeah.
So when Annie was being sassy, I was like, oh, Annie, you're fun. You're kind of mean a little bit, but you're fun. You're totally going to die just because you're fun.
Yeah, you're totally going to die. In the movie Black Christmas, that character is played by Margot Kidder, who played Lois Lane in the Superman movies. She's great. She's the loudmouth, funny one. And always the loudmouth, funny one is doomed, sadly. And she's always the best character.
Yeah, the one that's so much fun, that gets things rolling.
Yeah, and then she gets it. But yeah, that's, Halloween. It's classic.
Before we move on to the modern lens, I have just one more fun little final thing to talk about. Do you have a favorite kill in this movie? And if so, what is it?
Oh, it's when he kills the guy. It's like, I do not, my personal thing is I don't like it when Michael kills the women, the half-dressed women or the naked women. I think that is one of the parts of the film that I think this bleeds into modern lens. I think that is a horror trope that bugs me. The sexualization of murder, I think, is kind of gross. Many, many, many horror movies do it. You know, even Psycho, the kill happens in a shower. There's just something really perverse about it that kind of rubs me the wrong way. My favorite is the kill of the guy.
That's Bob.
Yes. Only one teenage boy dies in this movie. The body count's not super big in the movie.
Yeah.
But Michael uses his super strength to lift him into the air. Then he takes the knife and pins him to the wall with the knife. And then the guy dies and he's hanging there. And this is probably the most famous kill in the movie. And then Michael stands there and looks at him and cocks his head to the side like a dog. And you go, so it's, again, tying Michael to be animalistic and say he's inhuman. He does this and he feels nothing. He is pure evil. And if anything, he looks at the killing with the sense of like curiosity and wonder and like, oh, I just did something. That's interesting what I just did.
Yeah.
I think that's my favorite kill in the movie.
And I also think maybe another reason I can handle it is it's not as gory. Like the idea is gory, but we're not totally seeing it. Like we know Bob is dying because the toes like go limp, right? So it's like, we're not seeing a ton of blood. It's not like we know what happened is awful. I also need to tell you that the thought I had in my head that made me laugh out loud. In my brain, I thought the lift and stab kills every time. And I was like, oh my God, you were so Sarah.
There you go.
That was what my brain did.
No, that's a great movie. Legally Blonde is a great movie.
It's fabulous.
You should do an episode about Legally Blonde. How old does a movie have to be?
It has to be. So according to TCM, it has to be 25 years old. So 1998 is where we're at right now of what we can talk about on the show.
Okay.
That's 2001. So we've got like 3 years.
3 years and you can talk about Legally Blonde. It's a great movie. But it's a cartoonish kill too, because you go, that knife is not long enough to go all the way through his body. In no way would this ever pin him and hold him up in the air. But you're just supposed to buy it. You're supposed to say, Michael is so strong that this will happen.
And he can also like punch through things and, you
He
know.
punches through doors, he punches through windows. You can't kill him. You can stab him. He gets stabbed in the neck. He gets poked in the eye. He gets shot like five times.
Yeah.
He's one of these guys that is unkillable. You cannot kill him. He is the strength of a demon. And they've quote unquote killed him a few different ways in the movies that we'll talk about if we ever talk about Halloween 2 or Halloween, Halloween H2O or anything like that.
I mean, it technically is up for classic tenure this year.
There
That's
you
a
go.
1998 film. All right. So I'm glad we agree on the best kill. It is Bob. I also think this isn't a kill, but I do love the moment when Laurie goes into the room and discovers Annie's body, but then also discovers all the bodies because Michael's moved them all into the room. So it's like she sees the body, she freaks out, she like opens the cupboard and oh no, there's Bob and he falls down. It's like the seeing of her friends each kind of pop out and fall down is like a really cool kind of scary moment. And then to back into the corner and have Michael be there in the shadow.
Yeah,
That's cool.
that's a cool shot. Yeah, I think my favorite aspects of the movie are one, the score. I think the score is so good. It's so good. It's so creepy and simple. And like you said, kind of childlike. And that's kind of the thing of Michael Myers, is that he is kind of like a murdering child forever.
Yeah.
There's this weird kind of, I don't want to say innocence to him, but like this idea that he's just blank, you know? It's like he is, Loomis describes him as being pure evil. He's inhuman. There's nothing to him. He just is killing. And that's kind of like the simplicity of it. With the score, I think works really well. And then I really like how in this movie, the shots linger. Like this movie has so many shots that last for like seconds longer than a modern movie would have it be. And it gives you this sense of Michael could be anywhere. Like
Yeah.
you're watching these like long shots in these dark rooms. And it's very off-putting. And in some shots, Michael will walk into the end to the few last seconds of a shot. So you go like around every turn, you go like he could be anywhere. It's also a
Yeah.
movie that does not, aside from like certain point of view shots, you're not following Michael Myers. So you lose track of him. You go like, is he in his old house? Is he here? Is he there? And the end part of the movie does that really well, where the end of the movie is just showing you shots of the locations that you've been throughout the film, and then you lightly hear his breathing of going like, okay, he's clearly somewhere, but we don't know where he is.
He's in the shadows. Whoa.
He's the boogeyman.
I do actually love that shot of the shadows, though. Now that you're mentioning it, there's that one longer shot of Jamie Lee Curtis. You see, like, she's looking at her friends. There's shadows behind her, and you see Michael kind of step out slowly.
Slowly, because it goes from being completely black behind her to
Yes.
his face slowly fades in, and then he comes out of the shadows. It's a great shot. There's a shot in Black Christmas that I think is even scarier. This is one of the scariest shots I've ever seen in a movie. I'm going to spoil it for everybody, but there is a part where the main character in that movie, who's played by Olivia Hussey, she goes in, finds her friends dead in the room, and then she freaks out, she falls backwards, and there's a shot where she is like in the door frame looking at her dead friend on the bed, and then she hears breathing and she looks over, and in the crack in between the door frame, she just sees this eye staring at her like that, and you just hear the killer, and then he attacks her. It's really frightening. It's a great shot.
Because it makes you afraid of your own house.
That movie, I'd say, is much more brutal than Halloween. It's weird, but because it's more vulgar, it's like more upsetting. Halloween is much more of like a beginner's horror movie.
It's accessible. If someone like me can watch it, it's more accessible than something. I don't know if I could handle Black Christmas. I don't know if I could.
Yeah, it's upsetting at times. Yes.
Well, and again, it's so easy to be prepared for Halloween because it's such a part of, like, I've already seen a lot of these images.
Yeah.
So like, I already know that Michael's going to do that very famous. There's this very famous iconic moment in the film. Lori believes she has just killed Michael for the second time. She has stabbed him. She is in a doorway facing the camera and does not see him rise like the dead. He does like a full sit up. Like, he doesn't even need his arms. He just sits right back up. And you're going, oh my God, he's behind you. And she can't hear you because it's a movie. But it's incredibly iconic. And I think because I knew things like that were going to happen, it was not as scary as if I had gone in just in 1978, not knowing anything.
Yes.
Also, he does like a full body roll up. He's very like in tune with his body. And I was like, is that an animalistic thing? Like, what is this? Yeah,
Michael Myers, he's very in his body.
But I'm like, we learned that at theater school. Hey, drop downs and roll ups.
Yeah. But there are, there are those shots where Jamie Lee is there and then Michael Myers is behind her. And again, in the movie Scream, which is very influenced by Halloween in particular, influenced by all the horror movies. That's kind of the idea of Scream, is that it is the postmodern horror movie where all of the kids in the movie are obsessed with horror movies. So they are constantly referencing things. And in particular, there's a party at the end of Scream and they are watching Halloween and they're talking about it the whole time. And there's this one part that's a great part where, and it, again, it's so meta. Scream is incredibly meta. So there's this part where they are watching Halloween. Jamie Lee Curtis is on the screen. Michael Myers is behind her. And the character, Randy, is watching, saying, Jamie, he's right behind you. Turn around. And he is played by Jamie Kennedy. So it is him talking to himself in the movie saying, Jamie, turn around. The killer's right behind you.
So, and the killer's right behind him and he doesn't know it.
Right behind him.
Yeah. It's great.
Scream is a fun franchise.
It's the new millennium. Motives are incidental.
Yeah.
I'm going to move us into the modern lens portion of this show. What does not hold up? I think we have addressed this, but I want to say it again. I do not love the over-sexualized women and them being like, their bodies being over-sexualized and then being like murdered with their breasts out and stuff. Like, I just feel, one, we don't see Bob's butt ever. So why are, if you're going to make a woman show her boobies, you got to make a guy show his butt. Yeah. Rule number
why
one.
No peen? Why no peen?
Huh? Why no peen? If you're going to show a ton of boobies, show some peen or some butt. It needs to be tit for tat. Okay.
Or at least Bob's breasts out. You know, why aren't his nipples exposed?
Unless, well, like his glasses, his eye nipples are, but no, that's dumb. Also, Bob's a little sweetie. I actually really liked Bob. I had no beef with him. I was like, oh, you're not sexist. You're like making love to your girlfriend. You made sure she got off too. You're going to go get her a beer. Like, I'm cool with you, Bob.
Oh, yeah. That's when they have the shortest sex ever.
Yes. Yes.
Where you go like, it doesn't even, you're looking at it going like, I don't even know if they're kissing. It's, he's just kind of on top of her.
And their bodies aren't
bodies
even
are
in
not
line
aligned
either.
And then... And it's for like maybe 5 seconds. And then he rolls back over and she goes, that was great.
Yeah.
Go, wow. Okay. It's funny.
They both appeared happy about it. It was consensual. They were happy.
They both seem satisfied.
Just the over-sexualization of women's bodies and it feels icky. That's what it feels like. It feels like, ooh, viewer at home, you get to see some boobies. Ooh. And you're like, was that necessary? Yeah. I feel like you exploited these actresses. I don't like that.
Yes, that is something that is consistent throughout the entire horror genre that I think is one of the grosser aspects of the genre, which is the sexualization of murder in particular. There is like this sick connection between like a sexualization of particularly female bodies and this like violence against women that is prevalent throughout, you know, the entire genre. It's prevalent in society, you know, like we live in a horrible world, but the horror movie genre just leans into it heavy. And I don't like that. So I go like that. I don't like that. Basically, every woman that dies in this movie is either naked or half naked when she is killed in the film. So I don't like that.
Thank you for expressing it that way. Very well put. I feel like there's something to the hypocrisy of Michael. Like I wrote, sex is bad, but killing is okay. Riddle me that, Michael Myers. Like it
Yeah.
seems like he has judgment over women specifically having sex, but
Yeah.
he's like, that's bad, but me killing, good.
It's weird because it's not even 100% that he is killing them because they're having sex. It's just like he just loves killing. And they just so happen to be having sex. It could be tied to that the idea of he doesn't like that they're having sex, so he will kill them. It
Yeah.
could be that he in some way is getting sexual gratification from the violence. It's like he's a strange character.
There's also like obviously people at home, we need to mention there's no people of color in this film. It's just like
No.
cis straight white people. There are a lot of like gendered expectations. So Jamie's talking about like there's a part where she's like, well, I'm smart, so boys won't ask me out. And I'm like, oh, that's really sad. Oh shit. And you know, she doesn't have a date for the dance. She's the sad. Oh, we feel bad for her. Like it's crap like that. You know, and she doesn't think she can ask someone to the dance. There's a lot of like gendered expectations and gender nonsense from that time that are in this film.
That's like kind of the time capsule. I'd say it's
Yeah.
still these days that we still are suffering from all the same problems, but
Yeah.
you go like it is a movie from the 70s and and that's in there, you know. Although Jamie does smoke a joint at one point in the film.
She does. And something that I noticed is the only time we get her POV is when she's high and talking to the sheriff. And I was like, ooh, is that like a weird connection? Because there's all these POV
Yeah.
shots where Michael's the point of view of the killer, but then we have one POV shot from Jamie's brain and it's when she's high. And I was like, ooh, what does that
Maybe
say?
Michael is high constantly.
This is like Reefer Madness. Like, don't smoke marijuana. You'll go on a killing
Or
spree.
you'll become a killer. Yeah.
But on the positive aspect of the modern lens, I do love that this was co-written by a woman and that the women are smart and capable in this film. So that's cool.
Yeah, I don't think that any of the women are portrayed as being wrong,
Yeah.
really. There is this aspect of they're irresponsible teens who are being
Yeah.
gross and having sex in this random person's bed. So that's, you know, there's certainly that aspect of it, but Lori in particular is just got a good head on her shoulders. She's like a good kid, and she saves the two children. Is constantly worried about their safety, making sure that they're okay, and then fighting a killer and going to save her friends and all this kind of stuff. So she's a great character.
Although I had read that when Jamie Lee Curtis read the script, she was more attracted to like the Annie and the Linda characters because they were
Yeah.
more fun. And she felt like she was more like them in real life. And that Lori's a little bit of a stick in the mud, or like she's so straight-laced that she was worried about playing that. But I think she does a really lovely job.
I think that she brings like a really human, because Lori is cool. Like there isn't
Yeah.
anything about Lori. You watch her and you go like she's constantly like making little asides to herself and going like, oh boy, here you go again and all that. And so I think that Jamie Lee brings a like an attitude to Lori to where you really trust her and you go, if I'm going to be with anyone in this situation, I want to be with her in the situation.
Yes.
She's the one that you trust. But yeah, it's in particularly Annie, the character who dies first. She does do some things where she humiliates Jamie Lee
Yeah.
by like telling the boy that she likes her. But I think she's also like a nice friend and all of that. It is sad that she is the daughter of the sheriff.
Yes.
And the sheriff, they never really go into it, but he's like constantly going like, I don't believe that there's anything going wrong. And he doesn't know, but his daughter got killed
Yeah.
just moments before. It's sad.
I think he even has a line of like, if this is real, there'll be hell to pay or like something like that. And you're like, oh, that was your kid and you don't,
Yeah.
you know.
You're in for a rude awakening, you
Yeah.
know.
It's almost like you wish they'd make that connection a little more strong, but I don't know. I think they did. We all got it.
I haven't seen Halloween 2 in a long, long time, so maybe they talk about it in Halloween 2.
Also, that was really weird how she like just spilled butter on herself and was like, well, now I'm going to wash my entire outfit. I was like, I just live with the butter.
Exactly. That's strange. Being in somebody else's house and saying, ah, I dropped some butter on myself. Let me get completely naked. I think that that's weird.
And it's cold out there in Illinois. She's walking around in her underwear. I'm like, girl, it's cold. I'm cold for you.
Yeah, that's just, you go, oh, I see. It's a horror movie in the 70s. It's a low budget horror movie in the 70s. I see.
We need to see your butt. It's annoying. It is.
That's annoying.
I did just also realize one more thing that I didn't tell you, which is that they wore a lot of their own clothes as part of their costumes. And Jamie Lee Curtis was given $100 and she went to JCPenney and her whole wardrobe is from JCPenney for $100.
Really?
Isn't that fun?
Her outfit in the beginning of the movie is terrible. It's supposed to be terrible because it's designed to show, okay, Lori's not supposed to be cool. But then she gets a different outfit for when she goes to babysit. And that's a good outfit.
And it's just normal. It's like, you don't think twice about it. It's like jeans, blouse, sweater.
Jeans,
like, you're not.
Shirt and a sweater. Yeah. And then, okay, so here's something why earlier, I think prior to recording the episode, Sarah suggested that I dress up for Halloween as Michael Myers with the sheet on his head with glasses, which is, in one part, Michael Myers is pretending to be Bob after he's just killed Bob. He goes upstairs to Linda and he has the sheet on and Bob's glasses on over the sheet. And then he proceeds to kill Linda. So this just recently happened to Amy and I. This is a bizarre story. This is my partner, Amy, and I. We go on walks in the evenings in our neighborhood. For whatever reason, Amy said, oh, I just saw this thing online that said, if you're feeling happy, try taking a video of yourself and record yourself when you're happy and having good times. And so that you can go back and look at them and like make a playlist of here's us when we're happy. And so we said, okay, let's go on a walk. We're feeling really good. We're in a good mood. Let's record ourselves kind of going on this walk. So we have it on this little video where it's us leaving our apartment, going out, going, look at what a beautiful day it is. Our neighborhood's so beautiful. We're in such a good mood. We're so happy. We love it here. This is my favorite time of year. It's Halloween time, all of this. And we're walking. And then and Amy's going like, I love it here. And then Amy goes, what the? And she looks over across the street from us, like maybe 20 feet away from us. We looked across the street and standing there was Michael Myers, was just a guy dressed entirely like Michael Myers, just standing there looking at us. And we were like, is that a Halloween decoration? Because he was standing so still. And we started walking and his head turned to follow us. And then he started following us down the street. And we were like, that guy is either trying to scare us or something like that, or he thinks it'd be fun to go out and scare people or what. But we were like, this is what happens in a Halloween movie. You're in a good mood. It's Halloween time. You go for a walk and then Michael Myers is standing in your neighborhood and then he follows you and starts killing you. So we were like, this is bizarre. And this guy was like following us. And then he started following other people just dressed like Michael Myers walking around our neighborhood. And we were still videotaping ourselves. So we got him on video. We got us reacting to it. And then it's us going like, wow, this video had a twist because we were in such a good mood. And then we saw real Michael Myers. And then it ends with us going, we don't like our walks anymore. Let's go home. We're scared. So it was something.
It's terrible. It's like my nightmare.
It was awful. And so I go like dressing up like Michael Myers, I don't think it's fun or cool anymore. It's like you scare people. You scare people. It should be noted that as we're recording this, it's like a week before Halloween. And this happened maybe a week or two ago. So it was like solidly 2 to 3 weeks before Halloween. So this is too early to be pulling a prank like that. And it was just, it was cruel of that person.
Yeah, I don't care for that. That's just rude. I don't like that one bit.
So it was interesting that we were going to be talking about this movie. We had already known that. Mm-hmm, and then Amy and I in our neighborhood saw Michael Myers. And then as we were watching the movie this morning, we were like, wow, this is just what it was like. We were walking down the street and there he was standing just looking at us. So we had a real life encounter.
You experienced it.
We experienced.
And I believe you. So that means I might be safe if this is a real horror anthology and they come for you.
Yeah.
Is Amy's real name Laurie Strode? Did she ever reveal that? Is this a secret that maybe?
You know, we might have to have a talk about that. Does she have a secret brother who was institutionalized years ago? We'll find out.
I'm sorry you lived that. That's no, but that takes all the fun out of it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's still a good movie, but I don't like that somebody thought it would be fun to do that. If that person is listening to this, shame on you.
If they're listening to this, they're like rude boys that leave me one star on Apple Podcasts because they don't like that I have a different perspective for them. And I feel like he would be one of those people.
Yeah. If that's you, shame on you.
All right. So we are now moving into the double feature portion of this program. If you liked this film, check out these other films. We mentioned before, I don't know a lot about the genre. So what I said was Halloween 2, because I know it follows this. And, you know, they've got that whole new trilogy. So I don't know. Check it out. Also, we've mentioned them before. I think Psycho, Scream, and Black Christmas are all great films to watch with this. Scream is clearly taking a lot of its cues from this film. And then Psycho and Black Christmas inspired this film. And then because we watched Serial Mom a few weeks ago and we put that podcast out, I would say if you need, after you watch something scary, if you need something fun that's a slasher film, I'd say watch Serial Mom. That will pick you right back up. And she's killing people for silly reasons.
Yeah, that's a silly movie. That's a fun silly movie.
But Nick, what are your double features?
I would say it depends on what you're in the mood for. I think that this followed by Scream is a great double feature because you go, okay, let's laugh about it a little bit after this. Scream is still kind of intense, still a little scary. Yeah. But it is also kind of a horror comedy in a certain sense. And they talk a lot about this movie in Scream. And it's fun to go like, okay, we just watched Halloween. Now let's watch people watching Halloween. That it's a fun sort of thing. Or I would say, if you watch this and then you say, all right, now I'm in the mood for a Halloween movie. Again, the best Halloween movie is Hocus Pocus. That is the one that is the most Halloween-y movie. It's not scary. It's a movie that like anyone would enjoy. And it has so many jack-o'-lanterns.
So many.
And witches and all this fun stuff. So I go, Halloween may have been the first famous Halloween movie, but Hocus Pocus, I think, is when the Halloween movie was perfected. And not since Hocus Pocus has there been a movie set on Halloween that is as Halloween-y or as fun. I think it's the best Halloween movie.
Hocus Pocus is perfect. I love it. And it's also, if you watch something scary and you need like a palate cleanser, you know?
Yeah, you go, I want to watch something nice before I go to bed.
Exactly.
You watch Hocus Pocus.
Well, Nick, it was delightful having you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great.
And how can people follow you outside of this show?
I'm on Twitter, I guess, but I never tweet. I'm on Instagram, but I never Instagram. I have this theater company called Starkid Productions. We actually just released on YouTube a new musical called Nerdy Prudes Must Die that is a slasher musical. It is a horror comedy musical thing that is set in a town called Hatchetfield, which you may notice is very similar to Haddonfield from Halloween. So there's a little bit of a reference there. And it's again, it's very inspired by mainly Nightmare on Elm Street, but also Halloween, all of those sorts of movies. It is a take on a teen slasher horror comedy thing. If you want to watch that kind of thing, you could go watch Nerdy Prudes Must Die on YouTube. It's for free for everyone to watch if you have the internet.
Yeah, you should do it. It's great. Now that you're saying it, I'm like, oh yeah, Hatchetfield.
Yeah, it's like Haddonfield.
I get it now. I get it. Nick, this was lovely. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a treat.
And we will see you all next time on Talk Classic to Me, and happy
Happy
Halloween.
Halloween!
You have been listening to Talk Classic to Me with Sarah Greenfield. That's me. My guest this week was Nick Lang. They will be featured on our Instagram page. If you enjoyed our show, please introduce a friend and show them how to subscribe, and maybe even find us on Spotify for Podcasters or Anchor.fm because they are the same thing now, to become a contributing member. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Talk Classic to Me for some awesome content and to find out what's coming up next. Thanks for listening.